What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that intersect, confront, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Dr. Linda Elder, educational psychologist, is president and fellow of the Foundation for Critical Thinking. The Foundation is a nonprofit organization that seeks to promote essential change in education and society through the cultivation of critical thinking. Dr. Elder joins 411 Teen to explore how technology affects education, and she offers insight for parents about education, technology, and critical thinking. Dr. Elder, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you for having me.
Will you share with us some information about the Foundation for Critical Thinking? I mean, just what is it about and the goals, and we'll kind of look at that first.
Certainly. The Foundation for Critical Thinking is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We are in Northern California. We were established along with the Center for Critical Thinking. Actually, the Center for Critical Thinking was established first in 1980 by our founder, Dr. Richard Paul, at Sonoma State University, which is a university, again, in Northern California. Mm-hmm. And so we've been around for 33 years, and our purpose is to foster and help cultivate fair-minded critical societies throughout the world, fundamentally through the reform of education, but also in working with anyone interested in developing their thinking. So we write books, thinker's guides, curriculum materials for teachers interested in critical thinking and in bringing it into the classroom, but we also write books and thinker's guides for anyone interested in critical thinking.
Now, how would someone access you?
Come to our website, criticalthinking.org, and we have a very large presence on the web because we have a very large library of articles. Well, that's one of the reasons. So we have lots of free resources for people, and then there you can visit our bookstore and see our books that we have available. Now, one book I'm going to recommend for anyone who wants to just get started with critical thinking is one of our new releases, 30 Days to Better Thinking and Better Living Through Critical Thinking, and that can be found on our website. But again, we have many other materials as well for teachers and for students.
Okay. As we're talking about critical thinking, there's so many definitions. Would you share with us a working definition that you all use for critical thinking? Just what is it? I mean, you know, to me, we're talking about reasoning.
Right, we are talking. Absolutely. And so let me give you a few ways into the concept. Now, there isn't one definition that captures mm-hmm. all of the complexities of critical thinking, but there are some sort of, let's say, basic ways into the concept. So here's one. Critical thinking entails analyzing thinking in order to assess thinking, in order to, where needed, improve thinking. So the analysis of thinking is directly related to your definition that critical thinking entails reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another way of thinking about it. We all reason. We reason routinely throughout our lives, but we don't necessarily reason at a high level of quality. Mm-hmm. And critical thinking provides us ways into our thinking so that we can illuminate problems and, again, change our thinking where needed. Now, there is a, we can go then deeper into the concept by saying that critical thinking entails a disciplined way of living one's life in which one is concerned with the problematics in one's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
By that, I mean really two area that we can focus on, umbrella terms, and these would be egocentric thinking and sociocentric thinking. Now, we can get into those, but the brief idea is that all of us reason. We hope that we're reasoning well. We're often not reasoning as well as we would like to or that we think we are. And this is often because we are egocentrically oriented and aren't seeing the facts in a reasonable light, for example, or we're sociocentrically oriented. We're thinking about what is in it for our group instead of looking at, again, the facts and following the facts wherever they would lead us. So the human mind is at once has the capacity for reasoning at a high level, but we have these forces within us that often keep us from doing so. Therefore, in critical thinking, we say, well, we need to be concerned about those forces within us and figure out mm-hmm. how to deal with them.
Exactly.
So some of our tools will focus on those barriers, our intellectual tools.
And I think you've answered this, but I want to ask it in another way. So, because so often when you look at the general population, a number of people have real difficulty in critical thinking. And what I hear you saying is when they have difficulty in this critical thinking, that there's two reasons. It's either because they're focused on self or they're focused on the group. Basically, you know.
Often, especially when they're motivated. Now, often, I mean, people often as well make mistakes in thinking. So,
okay.
You can just be making a mistake, or you can be, as it were, making a motivated mistake. So you have an interest in seeing evidence in a certain light. So if someone is in an argument with his spouse, he may be actually distorting her words to fit mm-hmm. view of reality because he wants to win the argument. I mean, this is commonly done in, you know, unfortunately in you know, marriages and other intimate relationships. So when this happens, we're not seeing the facts as they are because we're motivated not to, because we want to
Well, I'm thinking particularly now of young folks, you know, teenagers, young adults, high schoolers, and it seems like they overall, you know, there are exceptions, really do not think critically well. Is that, would you agree with that? Or maybe that's just what I am encountering, you know, at the college level. I'm often surprised at the level of thinking that I find college students functioning at.
Right. And, you know,
People
will often think or say, isn't it true that people are thinking less critically than in the past?
Mm-hmm.
Which is somewhat connected to that. But the fact of the matter is, if I could give this a kind of a broad perspective, historically, insofar as humans have thought critically, historically, we have tended to do so within what we would call a weak sense. In other words, humans tend to think critically in order to serve their selfish interests. So many of these students or people that you're talking about often do think well in certain ways in order to get what they want. But that's just one form of critical thinking. What we're reaching for is a much higher form, mm-hmm. and that is minded critical thinking. Now, it's also true that critical thinking has never been fostered in schooling in any kind of significant way, probably in any country in the world, because critical thinking is not valued as a social objective or something that we are trying to reach toward, and it's not valued because we don't understand it. And so most people would say something like this: well, if everyone just thought like me, the world would be a lot better place. Right.
So or quite or it'd be real boring.
Exactly. We all think I'm the one who thinks critically. The problem is everyone else.
Yeah.
But then we can go further and say, having said all of that, there are very serious problems in the schools today. And I obviously am not the first person who's said this or has been concerned about it. But we've been trying to reform education now for, 30 or 40 years at least. And we haven't done it because we are not sure exactly what we're trying to reach toward. And we have at least three U.S. presidents have called for the importance of critical thinking in schooling, including President Obama twice. But thus far, we have not seen support for critical thinking in any kind of significant way. And I think that a root of the problem is that the people who are calling for it themselves don't have a substantive conception of it. And so we need a rich conception that we can bring into the classroom, that we can bring across all subjects and domains of thought, and bring across all classrooms so that students are learning the tools of critical thinking and they're using them in all of their classes throughout their educational process, and they're also using these same tools in everyday life.
So I think you have answered my next question, which critical thinking is something that can be taught?
Absolutely. And I would say it's something that, I was going to say must be taught, but let me back from that and say there are different forms of critical thinking, and one form is implicit critical thinking. So there are many people who think very well within a domain of thought, but they may not know what their thinking is doing. It's just intuitive to them. For instance, there are many people who are pretty good at parenting, but they may be parenting in an implicit way. They don't really know why they're good at parenting. They just parent the way their parents parented, and it works pretty well. But if you want to improve your parenting at whatever level you begin, this is where the tools of critical thinking are so important, because how do you move from an implicit, a person who thinks implicitly well about parenting to someone who is improving? You have to bring that thinking to the explicit level. And so with critical thinking, we develop tools that we use to enter our thinking, to make our thinking explicit, to see what is there, and to improve it. So let me give you just a few of the tools that might be helpful for people who are saying, well, what are these tools she keeps talking about? So one of the tools are universal intellectual standards. Now I'm going to mention a few of the ones that we consider essential intellectual standards that should be brought into teaching and learning on a daily basis, and they're going to be highly intuitive. Here they are: clarity, accuracy, relevance, breadth, depth, logicalness, significance, and fairness. These are some of the, as they say, essential intellectual standards that we need to be using more or less every day, and there are many other intellectual standards, but this is a starting place. These are standards that we want to use to test our thinking, to see what quality it is. So when I'm in this conversation with you right now, for instance, you are questioning me, and you are asking me questions of clarification. You're not necessarily aware that you're doing that, but you're doing that. So if I say something that you don't understand, then you may ask a follow-up question.
Right.
And when you do that, you're asking often for a question, or you're asking for clarification. Argument is that if we study this language of critical thinking, and universal intellectual standards is one concept with one umbrella concept, which includes many hundreds of other concepts, many hundreds of standards in natural languages that we use to assess our reasoning. So I can say, for instance, when I'm in a meeting, if there's a question on the floor and someone answers the question and I'm not sure how it's relevant, I can say, well, let's see, how is your answer relevant to my question? Because I don't see the relevance.
Dr. Elder, let me ask you to just hold your thoughts for 1 second. We need to take a brief break, but I want to get right back to this, okay? If you're just tuning in, program is 411 Teen. Dr. Linda Elder, educational psychologist, joins us this hour. She has co-authored 4 books, including the new release, 30 Days to Better Thinking, Better Living Through Critical Thinking. Dr. Elder, you're back. I had to interrupt you for a minute, but if you want to continue with those tools, talking about those tools, I would appreciate it.
Yes, I will. So let me give you a couple of other sets. So we have intellectual standards. And so, for example, let me just wrap that up. So when we're in a discussion with our children, we're parent in a parenting mode, and we're trying to understand one another's reasoning. We want to get deeply into what we're each saying. We want to clarify what the other person is saying. We want to be fair-minded in that process. We want to make sure our thinking stays relevant. We want to make sure the information that we're using is accurate. So if I say, well, this is what I said, then whatever that is needs to be accurate. Not something else, because the other person may say, no, that's not what you said.
Mm-hmm.
So this has to do with the malleability of memory. But so in social standards, we have to practice using them to bring them into our thinking, as we must do with all the intellectual tools. But here is another set that directly relates to reasoning, and that is that whenever we reason, whether we're reasoning well or poorly, there are 8 elements to our reasoning. We reason for a purpose, so we have purposes.
Mm-hmm.
We ask questions. We use information. We make inferences based on that information, as well as the assumptions that we're beginning with. So assumptions is a 5th element of reasoning. We use concepts in our thinking, ideas that guide our thinking. There are implications of our thinking. Our thinking, it doesn't just sit there in our minds. It goes somewhere. We act upon the thinking, for example. And then we begin with some point of view, which is informed by our assumptions and our concepts. So you can see how these elements of reasoning are interrelated. Where you have one, you have all of the 8.
Mm-hmm.
And remember I said, no matter how well or poorly you're reasoning, these parts are present. if we understand this, then we can enter these parts explicitly and ask about these parts. So I can say, well, what really is my purpose in parenting? Do I have multiple purposes? Do I have conflicting purposes? You could say, what is our purpose in this marriage? What is your purpose? What is my purpose? Maybe that's a good place to begin.
Start. Yeah, that may be. That may be. And I mean, I think that's great when it comes to parenting, because my question was, you know, how do parents, how can they get there? How can they improve their critical thinking, their communication? And one thing what I hear you saying is you got to be real clear about what they're doing, what they are doing, right?
Right. And I think this is where the intellectual standards come into play. We have to think about the development of the mind the way we think about the development, let's say, in a sport or in terms of musical talent or development of musical ability. So we know that when we're going to, for example, develop as an athlete, that we're going to have to do a lot of hard work, and there are going to be there will be a lot of practice, and there are going to be some drills that we're going to have to run, and we're going to have to do this over and over again. It's not going to be very interesting. And so these moves, these intellectual moves that seem very simple on the face of them, are not so simple because we have to work them in our thinking for them to be available to us when we need them. So if I practice, for instance, clarifying thinking, tomorrow I'm just going to work all day long and just ask myself, I mean, whenever I'm in a discussion, I'm going to say, am I really clear about what he said, or is there something that I don't understand about what she said? And if I do that, then I get better at seeing when I'm unclear. And over time, it becomes more intuitive to me, so that eventually, I'm at a place where I'm very clear about when I'm clear and when I'm unclear. And I'm very clear about when relevance is being violated, or when we're dealing with a issue in a superficial way. I can see that. So this is relevant to, let's say, the decisions that we make when we vote. Often people will use superficial reasoning in that process. They're not getting deeply into the issues. They're being easily persuaded by propaganda. And this is related, by the way, to the third main conceptual set in our approach, and that is the fostering of intellectual virtues. What we hope to achieve in our own lives and what we hope to help students achieve in their lives is the embodiment of intellectual traits such as intellectual humility, being able to distinguish at any given moment between what you know and what you don't know, intellectual empathy, the propensity to think within alternative viewpoints and to do this with skill and in good faith in order to actually hear what the other person is saying. So intellectual humility, intellectual empathy, intellectual integrity, confidence in reason, fair-mindedness, intellectual courage, intellectual autonomy. These are virtues that fair-minded critical thinkers are, again, working toward, but they're often missing, if not usually missing, in schooling, because teachers just don't have an understanding of these concepts. They don't have an understanding of really any of these concepts that we've been talking about at a very deep level. So they're not really able to help students develop their own intellectual abilities very much.
It's not in their training, though.
That's right.
You know? I mean,
it's not in schools of education. It's not. And so it's not really anywhere in human society except in very small, there's a person here or there. There's the intellectual who's a very good thinker, and sometimes it becomes a public intellectual. But usually our role models are quite that we hold up for students as good thinkers are often not the ones that are really the best thinkers in human societies.
Exactly. How does technology affect our thinking?
You know, we don't really know the answer to that, I think, yet. There are a lot of studies going on, as we know. We know that there are studies that are being done on teens, for instance, and what they're doing in terms of video games and technology. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know a lot about how this is online experiences are affecting students. But I think that there are a lot of things that we can figure out, as it were, without the data, without the research.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is that whatever else is true, that people must learn to reason well, because reasoning mm-hmm. is the main thing that we do to understand the world, to make sense of the world, and to survive in the world. And so video games may help, some of them may help in certain little bits and pieces of that process. I wouldn't say that they don't. But what I do know is that students are coming out of our colleges and schools at every level without basic skills of reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They have been often glued to their computers.
Mm.
You know, we also know that there's a lot of violence and, you know, violent content in much of the video games that are played, and it's sort of like watching violent movies. I mean, my view is, why would you do that when there's so many other things that you could do with your mind? I think that we are intellectually often anemic because we don't know what to do with our intellectual energy. And these students are doing what makes sense to them. They want to do something with this energy, and this is what they're doing with it. They're playing a lot of games, but a lot of them are doing social networking, and they're learning a lot of things on the internet as well, because we have this, you know, we're living in this information mm-hmm. explosion age, so it's mixed.
Okay.
Data.
Yeah. Well, again, and I guess, you know, the kids say they're all wired up. You know, like you said, playing these games and texting and utilizing social media. How much is too much?
Well, I think it's a good question, and I think it's a question that people have to decide for themselves, but we're not going to develop our thinking as reasoners if we don't take our reasoning seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever else is true, there must be some time built in to my everyday life in which I'm practicing reasoning at a higher level of skill. And again, every decision that you make to give your time in one direction, you're making a decision not to give it to a lot of other possible things that you could be doing. And one of them, for instance, is reading in great literature, reading in the works of the great thinkers that have lived, and weaving together big ideas. Because we tend to think in our society, well, if it's only worth reading if it's, you know, if it's a new release or if it's the latest study. And that simply is not a good way to think about developing the mind, learning powerful ideas, and working the ideas into your thinking. But this concept of working an idea into your thinking is very difficult for people to grasp.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's, you know, why I say, what do we do? What do parents do? What do teachers do? Because this whole concept is, I don't, I don't think anyone has, very few people have a real handle on it.
Right, because very few people are studying the mind in a way that is, that will illuminate concepts that, if taken seriously, transform the mind. This is what Socrates was reaching for. At 2,400 years ago or so, he said, we're developing all of these new tools for learning, and we're using these tools to learn about the, you know, the universe, and, you know, and physical things, but I, Socrates, think we need to be mainly using these tools to understand human thinking,
mm-hmm.
because human thinking is where the real problems are. And so people have been studying human thinking for, you know, thousands of years to understand the mind. But we've often done this in a kind of haphazard way, and so we don't have unified concepts that really are powerful if taken seriously. So let me give you one. We've already talked about this, but we'll bring it back in. So we deal with the three conceptual sets,
mm-hmm.
and the element standards and the traits, but we also are concerned about the barriers to critical thinking development. So let's take the concept of egocentricity.
Okay.
Now, all of us, if pressed, would admit that we're sometimes egocentric. If we understood that, that means that we're sometimes selfish or caught within our own perspective. We don't really hear the evidence because we're stuck within this narrow mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us would sometimes say, I think, yes, I sometimes do that, or most people would. But most people don't realize the powerful role that this force, or really this set of forces, is playing in their minds. And so they don't really study their own egocentricity. And because egocentric thinking can't stand the light of day, it's always sort of hiding from us. So we're trying to keep from seeing what our minds are actually doing. So if I'm distorting what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
and in a conversation, I'm thinking that I'm fully justified in that because I'm being egocentric.
Yeah.
So this concept, if understood deeply, by the way, teens really like critical thinking a lot. They really resonate with the concept because they know that they're often egocentric.
Mm-hmm,
they want
indeed.
To get on that, but they don't have a sense of how you do that. And the same would be true for this powerful idea of sociocentric thinking. If all of us understood that we are heavily influenced by one another socially, and that this causes us often to make poor decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And teens are so at risk for this. They sort of often just sort of blow with the wind, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
You can see them.
They go with the group.
That's right. And you can see this in the playground with very young children where you've got the bully and you've got the kids that are being bullied and you've got three or four or five or six or more of them just standing there watching.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And those that are standing there watching are following along. They don't realize it, but they're aiding, if you will, and abetting the crime because they're not stepping in and saying, wait a minute, is this the way we really want to be behaving as human beings living on this planet together? So people need to understand the problem of sociocentric thinking, which is quite complex, and then we need to take it seriously in our own lives. And that means I've got to ask myself after I finish this interview, well, in what ways am I sociocentric?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, we often think it's the other person that's the problem.
Often. But I guess the big question for me is, how do we get folks there? Do we get them, you know, to that point? And I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts. I mean, we're going to take a brief break and we'll come back to that question. of how do we get folks to a point where they, you know, are aware, are at least at some level of their egocentric, sociocentric thinking. You're tuned into 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I am having a discussion with Dr. Linda Elder. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return shortly. Some 90% of U.S. teens have access to the Internet. Today's teens have grown up with a mouse in their hands. It's a sign of the times. Dr. Linda Elder talks with 411 Teen this hour and explores the impact of technology on education and learning and thinking. Dr. Elder, you're back.
Thank you. So your question, yes, how do we get people to the point where they can think critically?
Yeah. What do we do? I mean, how do we get them there?
Well, it's
in education or in the home, you know, we've got to have some place, you know, that we start.
Well, it has to be, if we're really going to create and cultivate fair-minded critical societies in a global way, then we've got to take an approach that's going to help us bring critical thinking, a substantive conception of it, into all of the important domains of human life, including education, parenting. Politicians will need to take it seriously, and we'll need to take it seriously in our private lives. We'll have to take it seriously in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So we first must have, we must be clear about this concept. And so we need to teach students and people the elements of their reasoning. They need to understand these elements and how they're always embedded in their reasoning. They need to understand, they need to explicitly learn the role of intellectual standards in the life of the educated person and the intellectual and the person who's thinking at a high level of quality routinely. And they need to understand intellectual virtues. They need to study them. They need to discuss them. They need to articulate them. They need to exemplify them. Again, intellectual humility, intellectual empathy, intellectual integrity, and so forth. They need to learn the barriers again to critical thinking development. And in schooling, we must begin to teach or do a much better job of teaching content as a mode of thinking rather than bits and pieces of this and that information. This is the world that students live in now.
But don't we have, we've got to get the schools of education. At the college level, they've got to buy into this somewhere because teachers aren't getting this. They aren't being encouraged to do this. They aren't getting it in their training. So if they aren't getting it in their training, when they get into the classroom, that's not going to be something that's going to be pursued or even valued, right? I mean, that's what I'm seeing.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Because don't have the concept.
Right.
You can't teach it.
Right.
And yet we expect somehow these teachers to go in and foster critical thinking, and that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that seems to be the problem. As we look at technology, do you have any words of wisdom as far as when is the best way to introduce technology to kids? I mean, do you feel like they're introduced to it too early? I mean, I've seen kids.
Well, I don't know that, to me, the question is such that it's almost like a moot point.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to stop them from doing it.
Right, right.
The world that we live in now, the technological world that we live in now,
mm-hmm.
is such that I would say it's almost, of course it's got, there are positive things about it, but it's almost got us like in shackles. In the sense that it sort of surrounds us on all sides. It's a reality that, you know, we didn't have a few decades ago. And that students who are coming along now that don't know any other way of living.
The parents, and I'm looking at it from the parental point of view. I've had a number of parents ask, well, how do you feel about this computer age, and should I get my kid involved in computer class at 2.5? And so that's why I'm asking you that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm coming from. You know,
yeah,
I mean, we have classes at 2.5 for kids. And you can see kids walking around with these, you know, with smartphones, literally. So that's what I meant by asking.
Yes, I see the point.
Yeah.
I think that, students now, very young children, are going to be exposed to technologies early on. They're going to learn them when they're ready. They should not be, there's no evidence to suggest that if we have students, little children, working on computer games early on, that they're somehow going to perform at a higher level as parents
okay.
or in their
mm-hmm.
intimate relationships. Or on the job, there's just not that connection's not there. If people want to really help their children, the best way to do this is to help the children understand that the main thing that you're doing as you go through life is you're going to be reasoning,
mm-hmm.
and you need to. You know to know what is involved in reasoning. You need to know how to assess your reasoning and other people's reasoning. And this will help them whenever they're involved in any kind of question about video gaming or whether they should be involved in that or whether they want to be involved in that or how much time they should spend on that. If we're teaching people to get command of their reasoning, then the world will change in all kinds of ways. And one of those ways would be that we would begin to question technology a lot more than we are at present.
Okay.
But you can't do it by simply telling children, do this or don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be asking for your reasoning.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And so if we start in school early on and in parenting early on, focusing on reasoning, and how to improve our reasoning and how to understand one another's reasoning, And if we use these two tools routinely, then we will make better decisions about when we engage in technology and how we engage in it, and which ones we even develop and design.
Okay. The Foundation for Critical Thinking, would you share the web address again before in these last few minutes for the listening audience, how they can access? Because my next question was going to be some of the resources you may suggest, and it seems like the foundation may be full of resources, maybe a plethora of resources.
We are. Mm-hmm. We, again, our website is criticalthinking.org. And we have a very large library there of free resources. We have bundles that people can consider purchasing. We have home study bundles. We have junior high teacher bundles. One of our thinker's guides that is especially appropriate at the teen level is the Aspiring Thinker's Guide, and that can be used to understand the fundamental concepts that we've been talking about and ask questions about them and begin to bring those questions into daily discussions. And then again, 30 Days to Better Thinking, Better Living through Critical Thinking is one of our new releases. It's a book that's available, again, on our website in our bookstore. You can also join our community through our website. We have free memberships, and you can watch our video footage there, and we have some other resources that you may be interested in.
Okay. Are there any, in our last few minutes, are there any particular activities that you would suggest to parents to foster critical thinking?
The activities that I would say would be, that I would suggest would be, look at our resources, get a sense of the element standards and traits, maybe through the Aspiring Thinker's Guide and some of our other materials, and just take any one of the concepts and begin to work it and take it seriously. So, for example, one is implications. Follow out the implications of your reasoning. So you can say, well, am I really following out the implications of my reasoning in my marriage? So if I keep behaving this way now, I mean, in the future, the way I've been behaving in the past few years is, what will my marriage be like? So following through the implications in parenting. If I say this to my child in this way, what are some real implications that follow from this? So taking one idea, working that idea into your thinking, finding examples where it applies, and you can start really anywhere in the theory to begin. So again, a 30 days book would be a good starting place.
Okay. How does one assess critical thinking skills?
Well, we assess critical thinking skills by seeing the extent to which students, for example, are using intellectual standards in their reasoning. And we can do that in a number of ways. We can read their papers. We can see whether their writing is clear, whether their data is accurate, whether it's relevant, whether it's sufficient for the issue that they're focusing on or the position that they're taking. We can assess one another's thinking, again, using intellectual standards. So if you make a statement, I'm going to assess it anyway, right?
Right.
Is that true? Or degree, but those aren't, do I agree, or whether I agree with you is not a good standard for me to use.
Not at all.
Right, so we need, again, intellectual standards. So these are standards that are very simple on the face of them, but again, it takes a while to work them into our thinking.
Are there any clues that you would suggest to parents when they are deciding on an educational milieu for their children?
Are there any, what was the first
clues? Any suggestions that you would offer parents when they are trying to decide on an educational milieu for their children?
Yes,
because critical thinking starts very early.
Right, but unfortunately, so few schools are fostering it that it's going to be difficult to find a school, college, or university that is really fostering critical thinking. But ask questions focused on critical thinking. What is your concept of critical thinking? How do you tend to foster it here? Mm-hmm. How is it brought into the classroom on a daily basis? And if parents go our Aspiring Thinkers Guide, they can go in with some questions that they wouldn't have if they didn't have the guide. And they'll quickly see, most likely, that the school really, or the teachers, don't have the answers. So then what do you do? Home study communities is another option.
Okay. Is there any way that schools can enhance the thinking using technology?
I wouldn't say that that would be a starting place.
Okay.
I would say that teachers and administrators must first take the concept of critical thinking seriously, that we can't avoid. That's our starting place. And once we have that in place, then we can begin to ask how technology should or should not be used in the classroom.
Okay. Any closing? This has been great. I really appreciate. Thanks for sharing your expertise with 411 Teen. As we get ready to close, are there any words of wisdom that you'd like to share before
I would just say I would like to see us all moving toward the cultivation of fair-minded critical societies. But we tend to have an anemic conception of it, and all of us are going to have to study critical thinking to some extent if we're going to be fostering this with our children, whether we are teachers or parents. So the starting place is within our own selves to, and the challenge is within our own selves to take these concepts seriously and to see if they give us power and then to use them in our lives.
Okay. Well, Dr. Elder, thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Enjoyed it. Thank
okay.
you for having me.
All right. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org.